This is the Happy Station, broadcasting to North and South America on 9,955 kilohertz from 1 to 155 UTC and from 15 to 1555 UTC.
Hello, 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 everyone. Welcome again to the Happy Station Show, once again on the air. It's nice to have you with me, especially for this 55 minutes, or actually a little less now, because my special guest today is none other than Johnny Mann. Now, who is Johnny Mann? Well, there's Johnny Mann, the singer, Johnny Mann, the trombone player, Johnny Mann, the drummer, Johnny Mann, the piano player, and Johnny Mann, leader of the Johnny Mann Singers. All combined into one. Now, many of you may not know this, but the Johnny Mann Singers are probably the most heard vocal group anywhere in the world. They not only recorded jingles for over 500 stations around the world, but also appeared not on their just on their own recordings, but also on recordings of some very well-known singers. The songs that you may have listened to, you didn't realize it was Johnny Mann and his singers backing that singer up. So Johnny Mann is my special guest today, and he sent along some rarities, which we will take a listen to during the course of today's show. So let's kick off first with one of the singers that Johnny Mann and his singers backed up a number of times, and that was Dean Martin. Now, all of you are familiar with the song Everybody Loves Somebody, which was a big hit for Dean in the 1960s. But something that almost nobody knows is that it was Johnny Mann and his singers that backed Dean up in that classic recording. So here it is, Everybody Loves Somebody, Dean Martin, on this special edition of Happy Station with my very special guest, Johnny Mann.
Everybody loves somebody. Everybody falls in love somehow. Something in your kiss just told me my sometime is now. Everybody finds somebody someplace. There's no telling where love may appear. Something in my heart keeps saying my someplace is here. If I had it in my power, I'd arrange for every girl to have your charm. Then every minute, every hour, every boy would find what I found in your arms. Everybody loves somebody sometime. And although my dream was overdue, your love made it well worth waiting for someone like you.
If I had it in my power,
I would arrange for every girl to have your charm.
Every boy would find what I found in your heart. Everybody loves somebody sometime. And although my dream was overdue,
your love made it well worth waiting for someone.
Everybody loves somebody. Dean Martin with the Johnny Man Singers as background vocals on this special edition of Happy Station. Now, some of you are wondering, well, why didn't Johnny Man get credit for that? Well, it was very simple, because he was under contract with a different record label and they wouldn't allow his name or the singers' names to appear on the Dean Martin recording, which was Reprise. So to kick off this interview, we have to find out how it all began. You've had such a long career in music, and it always amazes me, people that have been in the business for such a long time have seen this transition from the music industry being run by people who love music to it being run by accountants and lawyers. In the day that you started, what was starting in music, was this something that happened by accident? Were you just a keen piano player as a kid, or was it a conscious decision to say, you know, I want to go into music?
Well, those words actually didn't come out of my mouth, and they didn't come out of my mother's mouth, meaning I want my son to play to become a musician. But she was, my mother was a conservatory graduate from the Peabody Conservatory. She played organ and piano. She taught, and she taught voice, and she produced stage shows with her being musical director. So when I was a child, I was in a choir at the age of five, and I had a little boys choir, boys and men, no ladies, and I just sang in choirs all my life until I got out of the Army. One church, whatever church it was, and I'd sing in a choir, and then go to the next, wherever it was, and sing in the choir. And that developed my love of choral music, of course. I didn't actually set out to be a musician, because my mom wanted me to play heavy piano, and I didn't want to play that. I wanted to play football. And she, bless her heart, she said, "Sit down." So I sat down and did my piano stuff, and then in high school I heard Tommy Dorsey orchestra music and dance band music, and I said, "Gee, what's that?" I heard an instrument. She said, "That's a trombone." I said, "I got to have a trombone." So So I got a trombone, took a few lessons, and because I already knew music, I started playing in bands in school. Right away, you were in the school marching band or symphonic band, whatever kind of band they had at the school. And that helped. Me play in orchestras around Baltimore. Baltimore, Maryland, was my original home, and I went to school there, just to high school. I only went through high school because then I went right into doing music, and playing trombone and singing. And I had my first vocal group, and I played bass, stand-up bass, for a number of years for fun, and did it. So I just became a part of music, or music became a part of me, and I pursued it then. When I went in the Army and came out of the Army, I was in the big Army band in Washington, D.C., because I lived in Baltimore. We concertized all over the world, 10 countries of Europe. It was a very prestigious organization. It wasn't just a marching band that marches down the street. It was a 90-piece symphonic band, 30 voicemail chorus, and I came out of the Army and decided I wanted to be in big music, and big music was either New York or Los Angeles.
It sounds like, for example, when you were learning to play the music instruments and discovering your love for music, that it was sort of like you were almost like a jack of all trades. You were a choral singer, you were playing piano, and then you were playing bass, and then you were playing trombone.
It just grew because of the interest popped up for me. I was in my first vocal group. Had a pianist who was a better jazz player than I was. So I had my trombone, of course. And then we had a guy played saxophone and a girl who sang and brushed drums. But there wasn't room. Trombone didn't fit there. So I said, well, instead of trombone and a sax and piano, I'd switch and use bass and have the rhythm section be a little better. So I did that.
When you joined the industry in New York and Los Angeles, it was very different at that time. Would you say that when any musician at that period, including yourself, were joining the music industry, it was a lot easier than it, say, is today?
Well, I wouldn't say that it was easier. It's just so different. Nowadays, or even in those early years of mine, the 60s and the 70s, pop rock and rock and roll music was making more young people jump into music. But I got into recording right off the bat and writing because I was a choral guy. I was a vocal writer, arranger. I wrote for movies and things like that, where I wrote the scores, the orchestrations as well. But I was primarily a vocal guy.
Mm-hmm.
So I had my first vocal group, and I got a job on the NBC Comedy Hour, Four Guys and Four Girls, I being one of the guys. And we did that for about 2 years. And then I met the first pro singers I ever knew. And I just made a demo record, and I took it into newly formed Liberty Records and showed it to them. And they said, okay, we'll make you our vocal group.
When you were arranging and writing choral arrangements, was there any influence on the groups from the 1940s, like the Modernaires and others? Did that have an influence on you?
Well, when I started off singing, my first vocal group in Baltimore was a girl and three of us guys, like the Modernaires or the Pied Pipers or any of those four and five voice vocal groups. That was influenced because that was popular at the time. And that's what I did, only I got into studio work when I got my Liberty contract, because the different people they had, different artists they had, I backed them up as backup. I mean, the producers took me and said, okay, get eight voices on this recording and whatever it is.
Let's now take a listen to one of the many singers that Johnny Mann and his singers backed up over the years. Here's Keely Smith and Sunday.
that someday you'll want me to want you. When I'm in love with somebody else, you expect me to be true and keep on loving you.
Someday with Kiwi Smith featuring the Johnny Man Singers. And you're listening to Happy Station, broadcasting to North America via WRMI in Miami on 9955 kilohertz, and of course around the world on their website at www.wrmi.net. And I do want to hear from all of you, because it's actually fun to get feedback from listeners, because you never know, your email or your letter may suggest a show. Now, I'll give out the email right now, so you'll have time to get a pencil and paper to write down our snail mail address, which I will give out at the end of the show. The email address, however, is pcj, like peace, cheer, and joy, .happystation@gmail.com. Once again, pcj.happystation@gmail.com. Let's now continue with my conversation with legendary Johnny Mann. And one of the topics that I wanted to touch about was, how much influence did he have when working with all these singers? So when you were working, let's say, with Frank Sinatra or any of the others, and let's say the musical director was, let's say, Nelson Riddle or Billy May or whoever, how closely did you work with the arranger and conductor? Did you have a lot of input and say, look, Nelson, I don't think this would work too well. I have a better idea.
No, we didn't. We had never had any conflict, because, first of all, Nelson knew what he was doing, and whatever he wrote for Frank, we sang it. I don't know whether you remember "Hey Jealous Lover," Frank Sinatra's.
Yes,
I sang on that with two other guys and a girl. But we just went into the studio as pro singers, and as a studio call, and they said, mm-hmm. "Okay, we want to have this vocal group over here. John, Betty, Mary, come on over and do this." And they give you the music, and we'd sing it and do whatever that Nelson had written for us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's always the way it was. There was never any conflict. If I were just doing the background with singers, I didn't write a note. I just brought, they said, we want four boys and four girls. I said, okay. So I got contracted with the singers, and we went to the studio, and they passed out the music, and we sang it.
So it sounds pretty much, when I spoke to Ray Conniff's daughter, Tara, she told me that with her father, it was almost the same thing. He was backing a lot of the singers at Columbia in the 1950s.
That's right.
And then all of a sudden, his singers and his orchestra started to record on their own.
That's right.
So with all that training that you had working with conductors like Nelson Riddle, that must have been invaluable.
Well, there was no strain to working with conductors. I didn't even talk to them unless it was something special. I'd get a call. Hey, can you, we're doing a session on Tuesday night at 8 o'clock. We'll do four sides with with somebody. And I said, okay, we'll be there. And I'd book the singers, and we'd all show up, go in and do it. But we didn't have any, we didn't start working the arrangers. And the arrangers, including myself, we had that all written way before we got in the studio.
When you formed your own group, the Johnny Mann Singers, and recorded under your own name, was that something that happened by accident, or was that something that you had wanted to do after backing up other musicians for a while?
Well, that's what the first thing that happened. I got my first, I met the Pro Singers on the NBC Comedy Hour, and then when I made my demo record, I took it into Liberty, gave it to them, and they said, okay, we'll make you a vocal group. What's your name? I said, John Mann. They said, well, that's pretty dull. So I said, well, that's my name. They just made it Johnny. So the Johnny Mann Singers came out of it, and we've lived with that forever, ever since. But then I was an artist, quote, for Liberty Records as a singing vocal group. And started the albums, and now since then we've done 42 albums.
Now, at that time, was there any competition going on, let's say, between yourself and Ray Conniff and Anita Kerr, who also had vocal groups? Was there a competition going on between the three of you?
Well, I don't know of any competition. I knew them both, of course. In fact, I was with Ray the last couple of weeks. He was alive, just being friendly. But I knew them both, each of us recorded with their own record company. And when anything happened at Liberty, I did it. And whenever it happened at Columbia, Ray did it. And we just did what came by. But it wasn't like, oh, the three of us are applying for a big job contract or something. None of that ever happened.
But also at the same time, all three of you had your very own distinctive sound. I mean, Ray Conniff, even if you don't, if the announcer doesn't announce the song, you know right away it's a Ray Conniff recording. The same with Anita Kerr and the same with yourself.
Yeah, that's because we all have a right or like to write our arrangements, what we hear in our head and want to put on paper.
Now, when you went into the studio in the early 1960s to record with Cy Zenter, an album that you won a Grammy for, called Great Band with Great Voices, that's a very interesting project because you listen to it now. When I listened to it recently, you know, sometimes a lot of music from that period, when you listen to it today, it sounds dated. That album doesn't sound dated. The new version, which has been issued on CD, it sounds like it could have been recorded just like, you know, a few months ago. The way the powerful vocal arrangements and the powerful orchestra arrangements was when you went into the record that album. How did that come about?
Well, that was Cy Zenter had a contract with Liberty Records also, and they just called and said, hey, we want to put a thing out and call it Great Bands with Great Voices. Johnny Mann Singers and Ray and Cy Zenter, and I said, well, that sounds fine to me. So they gave me a list of the tunes and the lead sheets, and I wrote out the arrangement for the Johnny Mann Singers, you know, Serenade in Blue and all those good tunes. And I wrote out all the arrangements, and then I'd give them to Bob Florence. Bob Florence was an orchestrator, a young guy, who did Cy Zentner's orchestration for him. Cy was a trombone player, but he wasn't an arranger or conductor. So I'd write the vocal package and give it to Bob Florence. Bob would write the orchestration, and then we'd go into the studio and do, we did three or four tunes and knocked out 12 eventually. And that's how that combo came.
When you went into the studio to record this album with Cy that you won the Grammy for, was the intention for it to win a Grammy? Because sometimes some musicians,
I didn't even know about Grammy. I'm sitting here right now looking at my wall in my office. I got five of Grammy nomination award things up there. But we didn't think Grammy. We weren't thinking Grammys in those days. First of all, they were new. Grammy Awards were brand new in those years. And we didn't go in thinking about that. We just went in to, hey, we're singing another job today.
Let's now take a listen to a track from that Grammy Award-winning LP. Great Band with Great Voices, Swing to the Great Voices of the Great Big Bands, Cy Zenter and his orchestra with the Johnny Mann Singers, and a song that you'll know, it was made popular originally by the Mills Brothers, Paper Doll.
I'm gonna buy a paper doll that I can call my own. When I come home at night, she will be waiting. She'll be the truest doll in all this world.
Cy Zenter and his orchestra with the Johnny Mann Singers from the album Great Band, Great Voices with Paper Doll, a song originally made popular by the Mills Brothers. Johnny Mann, who is our special guest today, also worked in television, one of the first shows that he was associated with as musical director for almost four seasons was The Joey Bishop Show, that also co-starred a very young Regis Philbin. How did you get involved with the Joey Bishop Show?
They got Joey because he would have been competition for Johnny Carson. And they got Joey Bishop and they auditioned me. They asked me to come in and talk and see if I wanted to be the musical director. And I said, yes, I'd be pleased. And I went in and did that. And of course, Regis came in as the announcer. And we did that for 3 years. And that was really a lot of fun.
And you also did a voice for an animated series for Alvin and the Chipmunks. You were the voice of Theodore and the musical director for that.
Well, that's right. In 1956, I signed my record contract with Liberty. 1956, the same year, Ross Bagdasarian, if you know the name, created the Chipmunks. And I knew Ross very well. He was a songwriter, an aspirant songwriter. And he made me musical director of the new Alvin and the Chipmunks television series. So I wrote all the opening music and the arrangements and orchestrations and everything for it. and I sang the voice of Theodore.
Now, I heard from people that used to do similar kind of projects at that time. Is it true that you would record it on tape at a normal speed, sing it much slower, and then speed the tape up?
That's the way it works. You record the orchestra track at 15 IPS, that's 15 per second, and then we would get the orchestras clear and clean. Then when we did that, we would drop it down to 7.5, which was, of course, half as fast, and we would record with that track. We would record the voices slow and speaking out, you know, Alvin, all real spoken, overly enunciated. When that was clean, then they brought it up back up to normal speed. The orchestra came back to normal, and the chipmunk voices went up on the boy, and that's where the chipmunks came from.
That sounds so complicated when you think about the new technology today, where you don't even have to do it that way.
That's the hard way. You just had to do it, but nowadays you can do that all with your computer.
Yeah, yeah. Another milestone in your long career was when you recorded a cover version of a song made popular by the Fifth Dimension, "Up, Up and Away," which became a hit in the United Kingdom. And in fact, I mean, a lot of our listeners in the UK, when I told a few of them that I was going to have you on the show, said, "Oh yes, Up, Up and Away, we remember that."
Yeah.
How did you choose that song?
Well, I didn't. Liberty Records chose it. And they said, "Why don't you do a recording?" And I did it here, and it became very big here in the United States. But the Fifth Dimension had the original. But then, unbeknownst to me, I didn't even know it, Keith, that they took it to Europe, I mean to the United Kingdom, and in England it became number one. And I don't know how that happened, but it did.
Would you like to ride?
Up, Up and Away, the Johnny Mann Singers here on the Happy Station. And my special guest today is Johnny Mann. This would be a perfect time for you to get a pencil and paper handy, because towards the end of the show, I'll be giving out our snail mail address so you can send in your reception reports and receive a QSL card and be entered into the lucky draw to win one of two shortwave radios, which I will tell you about later. Let's now continue with my conversation with legend Johnny Mann. Some people don't realize this, but if you tune in to radio stations anywhere in the world, you're bound to pick up at some point the Johnny Mann singers singing a station ID.
Quite possible.
So was this the kind of thing where a radio station said, look, we want you to have you record an ID for us, and all of a sudden it was like a snowball effect. It
that's
started
right.
out very small and...
That's,
yes?
That's exactly what happened. We started right here in Hollywood with KFWB Channel 98. We did that first. Then we went over to Bill Drake. Do you know the name?
Yes.
Bill Drake was a broadcast consultant for radio stations. And he put me, and I did a 93 KHJ for KHJ mm-hmm. Radio in Los Angeles. And then he took that and spread it around, and we became where he was the radio consultant, and he would only use me doing the jingles. So I did all my jingles, most of my jingles at the time, through Drake, including the ones we did for Australia and Hamburg, Germany, and Honolulu, and a couple of different places. Taiwan.
Even here in Taiwan, yes, that's right. Now, when you recorded these jingles for radio stations, how did you write the arrangements? Would you try to find out from the station first what is it that they wanted first, or would you have some let's say standard ones that you'd record and just include the ID of that station in it?
No, they were all originals. And when a station called, first of all, their call letters were different than anybody else's call letters, so I knew I had to make a logo with the call letters in it, and then they'd say. Our thing is KRTH Los Angeles, and right now I've been doing K Earth jingles. They call it K Earth, but it's KRTH. So mm-hmm. and we did the K Earth 101 or 90. Yeah, K Earth 101 Los Angeles, and we did that. We've been doing that for 18 years. But when they would usually say, we want to say the logo and Merry Christmas, the logo and then the name of a jock. And you mm-hmm. know all the jock names from K-Earth, and I mean from KHJ. What's his name? Morgan in the Moore, Robert W. Morgan, and all those broadcasters that were famous nationally. And they were all KHJ guys at the time and K-Earth guys. And they'd give me a name or they'd give me a short line that they wanted. You know, it's a bright morning on K-Earth 101, whatever. And then I just write the music to it and record it.
So when you work in a studio then, do you have everything prepared before you go to the studio? Or you have everything prepared, but when you're in the studio, you make changes?
No. I write the music out, of course. I create it and write all the music out and just make copies for the singers. And we go in and sing it. They don't change anything unless they decide in the session to do something a little differently. But they usually don't do that. It's not a good idea. Although I can do it, and I've done it before in the past, but very, very rarely. I come in, they give me a list of 20 jingles, and I'll write out the jingles, and then I'll talk to the guy on the phone and say, here's what it's going to sound like. Da 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 KRT 101. They say, okay, that's great. And then I do that for all of them, and then we go into the studio and record them.
I'd like to tell you about a remarkable radio station.
Hello, baby!
Oh, the great oldies.
K-Earth 101. Wow, I know you love me.
I'm the real Don Steele, and you're a K-Earth winner, 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 winner.
K-Earth 101. R-E-S-P-C-T.
Oldies Radio. K-Earth 101.
Yeah, man.
The best.
So the vocalist that you have, how do you pick the vocalist? Do you
You mean the singers?
Yeah, the singers. Yeah, is there like a database of singers that just record with different vocal groups and you call them up, or do you have your own regulars?
No, you develop people that you work with most of the time, depending on the size of the group. I mean, if they only want four singers, you get so and so. If they ask for seven singers, you get so and so. You know. And but now most of my jingles in the last bunch of years have been with, in fact, all of the jingles we did, with one of the, like an exception, were six voices, two girls and four boys. But the last, let's say, 18 years or so, it's been three boys, three girls, and three boys, mm-hmm. Three and three. And I just write the parts for that. But right. One of the big things that started the jingles going was the sound of the city, which I wrote as like an alma mater song for KSFO San Francisco.
Right.
And that was very big. And then with the success of that, I wrote Sound of the City, which is a whole song. The Sound of the City for San Francisco, San Diego, Los Angeles, Chicago, Miami, a whole bunch of places.
KFRC, San Francisco, the Big 610, KFRC.
Listening to America's number one music station.
93 KSJ, Los Angeles.
And that was just a few of the jingles that Johnny Mann and his singers recorded for not just radio stations in the United States, but also radio stations around the world. Even here in Taiwan, there's one radio station that runs every hour, Johnny Mann and his singers doing the station ID. Okay, well, you know what? We still have some time left. And outside the studio door, since we began recording today's show, are three singers that have been wanting to come on. They have been coming in every so often, pulling at the sleeves of my shirt saying, when are we going to be next? When are we going to be next? It's been so annoying that I'm like, okay, you know what, guys? You can end off this interview. So here they are, the Chipmunks. That's right, you heard me correct. The Chipmunks are making a special appearance with The Bare Necessities, conducted and arranged by Johnny Mann, with Johnny Mann as the voice of Theodore.
Yeah. bare necessities, the simple bare necessities. Forget about your worries and your strife.
I mean the bare necessities.
But you don't need to use the claw when you pick a pair of the big paw paw. Have I given you a clue?
The bare necessities of life will come to you. They'll come to you.
So just try to relax.
Oh, yeah?
In my backyard. If you act like the bee acts, you're working too hard. And you find out you can live without it and go along not thinking about it. I'll tell you something true.
The bare necessities of life, the bare necessities of life, the bare necessities of life will come to you.
Alvin and the Chipmunks with the bare necessities, with the musical direction and of course the voice of Theodore, by Johnny Mann. Okay, Alvin, you can leave the studio now.
No, I want to stay.
Yes, but if you do stay, you need to be quiet.
What do you mean? Are you saying I'm noisy?
Well, you said it, I didn't. Okay, Alvin, but you better be quiet or I'm going to set my dogs on you. Ugh, chipmunks. They just drive you insane, don't they? I can understand why David Seville is always screaming after them. Anyway, you are listening to The Happy Station. And it's now time to give out our snail mail address, so hopefully I've given you time to get a pen and paper handy. Here goes. Happy Station, 8th floor, number 47, Lane 31, Section 1, Sanmin Road, Banqiao, Taipei, Taiwan, ROC 22070. Once again, Happy Station, 8th floor, number 47, number 47, Lane, L-A-N-E, 31, Section, S-E-C-T-I-O-N, 1, Section 1, Sanmin Road, and I'll spell Sanmin for you, that's S-A-N-M-I-N Road, Sanmin Road, Banqiao, B-A-N-C-I-A-O, Banqiao, Taipei, Taiwan, R-O-C, 22070. So if you send in your reception reports or a letter of any kind, you will be entered into a lucky draw to win one of two shortwave radios, the Sanjin ATS-909 and the ATS-606A. So I have two radios going out to two different people, and we will have the lucky draw at the end of June. And, of course, before that, you will also receive the QSL card. Now, some of you are wondering, wait a second, I sent it in a while ago. I didn't get my QSL card yet. Well, it's because I usually wait till I get a stack of them. So I only have to go to the post office once every 2 weeks. So I just sent out another batch. So do let me know when you get it. And you can also email me. My email address is PCJ, which stands for Peace, Cheer, and Joy. PCJ.happystation@gmail.com. That's PCJ.happystation@gmail.com. So I still have time to squeeze in one more piece of music. Let's take a listen to Johnny Mann again with the Cy Zenter Orchestra with a song called Mississippi Mud here on The Happy Station.
As a cow chewing.
Mississippi Mud, Johnny Mann and his singers, and Cy Zenter and his orchestra from the Grammy Award-winning 1962 album, Great Band and Great Voices. And guess what? We have run out of time. That's right. So once again, our email address is pcj.happystation@gmail.com. And if you didn't have time to write down the snail mail address earlier to get the QSL card and to also enter the lucky draw to win one of those two shortwave radios that I'm giving away to two very lucky people, you can log on to the website of WRMI, which is www.wrmi.net. Again, www.wrmi.net. So until next time, friends, this is Keith Perron, all the way in very, very hot Taipei, Taiwan, saying so long, au revoir, auf Wiedersehen, adios amigos, and sayonara.
This is The Happy Station, broadcasting to North and South America on 9,955 kHz from 1 to 155 UTC and from 15 to 1555 UTC.